All right, and welcome to Fast Break Breakfast NBA Podcast. My name is Keith. Once again, here alone without John and Chuck, we will be back to our usual formatted show that you know and love before you know it. But until then, today we have a very special guest, Adam Mahrez, who is here to discuss the love of my life, Nikola Jokic, and my 2016-17 cheat team, the Denver Nuggets. Spoiler alert, I keep myself very calm and reserved when talking about Nikola. But before we jump into the interview, I want to change it up and tell you about another NBA podcast that I hope you're listening to, the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast, which digs into pro basketball history. They're currently doing an entertaining series called Basketball Mysteries of the 70s. I'm pretty sure Chuck would do better on his game of scones if you listen to Over and Back more. So be sure you check out Over and Back on Hardwood Paroxysm, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Okay, now get your skip button handy like we learned last week, because you were just one 30-second jump from Adam. Annoying commercial coming in 3, 2, 1. My guest today is Adam Mahrez. He's the site manager for Denver Stiffs and host of the Pickaxe podcast, which is kind of hard to say. And he is a writer for Vice Sports, among many other sites. Adam, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. And Pickaxe podcast. The difficulty to say it is part of the fun.
It's a lot of diction involved. I will say I've gotten very good. I've been reading some Dr. Seuss tongue twisters to my toddler. So a little Fox and Socks. I've gotten very good.
How old is your kid?
He is 20 months.
Oh, wow. See, I got an 18-month-old, so we're right there.
That's good. Is your 18-month-old, is it a boy or girl?
It's a girl.
Is a girl? Is she bright? Can she speak and do other things? Because I have a boy, not, maybe he's bright, but yeah, the speech skills lacking.
Is this your first kid?
This is my first kid.
Yeah, so same with me. So you're probably going through the same anxiety of like, God, I hope I'm teaching her everything correctly, because I wonder that too. We'll meet with another kid that like has more words, and I'm like, oh no, we're behind.
Well, so, lots of people keep assuring me, like, oh, don't worry, Keith. Little boys sometimes they take a while to talk, you know.
Yeah.
But he's really tall, so he's kind of big for his age. And like, we'll be at the park, and some kid will come running up and be like, hey guy, hey, do you want to play? Look at the tree. And I'm like, oh my God, like is this kid? But then I feel better, you know, like a parent will come over and be like, how old's your son? I'm like, he's 1.5. And they're like, oh, this kid's 3. And I'm like, oh, all right, good. I feel much more relaxed about it.
Yeah, I went through that growing up, because I was always the tall kid that everybody thought was like 3 years older. So I sympathize with your son.
Yeah. Again, and my parents tell me that I was a very late talker. But my wife was like, I was, you know, when I was 1.5, I was potty trained in speaking in sentences. And I'm like,
eh. Yeah.
You're also smarter than me.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
So listeners, I met Adam at Vegas Summer League. He was at the SB Nation house, which deserves some explanation. It was some form of giant, borderline unfinished mansion.
Right.
That I guess you guys Airbnb'd or something.
Yeah, I think to give an image, it kind of looked like a cross between the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air house and the Scarface house. So that was kind of the quality of house we were staying at, only somehow had like inexplicably the most disgusting floors and furniture you can imagine.
It was like those homes if you removed all fixtures and any nice furnishings. It was like, what is this? No, this is not marble. Like it definitely had the, the economy is booming. I'm going to build this large house. The bank will let me do whatever I want. And then halfway through, they're like, oh, we can't.
Right.
Yeah, we can't. So only now that. I assume it's used for B movies and worse.
Yeah.
But it was, so I walked into this huge mansion, not really knowing anyone, but it was like a dorm room. It smelled horribly. I don't know if that was there before you guys got there or not. But then it was also like dorm couches everywhere. So it was
it's a frat house.
Yeah.
It's definitely a frat house feel, but a great time. That's one of my best favorite weeks of the entire year. It's a 20 writers staying together in one house, 20 NBA bloggers, and everybody stays up till like 5 a.m. just talking hoops. It's a great time.
Yeah. And that was so, and that was the context where we met for the first time. We'd follow each other on Twitter a bit, but it was super fun. It's really fun when you talk NBA with just other people who are also similarly obsessed and sick about the NBA and have all kinds of weird knowledge. We were watching the Power Hour YouTube video that you created, actually.
That's right.
And so how can people find that? What's the best way to Google that on YouTube?
I'd probably just type in NBA Power Hour. I think it comes up.
Yeah, it was fantastic. So it's a solid hour, which you can use for drinking games or no. of just awesome basketball highlights, and that's really cool. Well, anyway, Adam, one of the reasons I got you here is in the wake of today's massive NBA Global Games announcement.
Yeah,
the Denver Nuggets going overseas, and so I scrambled to find the biggest Nuggets expert I could get. Adam,
you couldn't get a hold of him, so you called me.
That's right. Yeah, this is very tongue in cheek. We had scheduled this, but yeah. So the Nuggets are going to London to play. Is it two games or one game? I guess they do a back to back or something.
Yeah, I think it's a home and road. So that would be the two games against Indiana. But yeah, it's really exciting. In fact, we're already being flooded at Denver Stiffs with people excited because, surprisingly enough, the Nuggets have a really, really, really big European fan base. And part of that is because they're a very international roster.
I think
they've got like 5 or 6 European players on the roster, maybe more actually, with some of their second round picks that are still stashed. And then on top of that, though, weirdly enough, for whatever reason, European fans really were drawn to the Nuggets during the Allen Iverson, Carmelo Anthony, J.R. Smith, Kenyon Martin era of Denver Nuggets. And I every week we'll meet a new Nuggets fan on the site that says, that's from Spain or from Italy, and that's when they fell in love with the team. So it's kind of an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah, that's really cool. And it does make sense especially with the international flavor of the roster. But that's cool about, people jumping on in the Iverson, Carmelo years. I will say, as a Grizzlies fan, I don't think we picked up any international fans during the 6 games Allen Iverson played for us.
That didn't work for you.
Yeah, I mean, we were clearly courting them, and it just did not.
Yeah.
It just did not take. So with the Nuggets going over there, is that in any way? I feel like in the NFL, when they send teams to London, it's kind of a punishment for their home crowds.
Yeah.
Do you think that's related at all? Because despite, I think the Nuggets are incredibly interesting, one of my favorite league pass teams, it does seem like maybe the enthusiasm has kind of left the building. Is that accurate?
That's not even accurate. It's an understatement.
Okay.
The atmosphere was downright miserable, like a funeral home at Pepsi Center this year. They were last in attendance by a fairly wide margin, and then but it wasn't just being last in attendance. It was also just kind of the type of people that were going were people that got the tickets for free.
Oh,
and
yeah,
didn't know what to do. So I mean, there was a lot of games. You know, Denver's obviously it's not a cold town, but in the middle of winter we'll get a snowstorm, and then there'll be 500 people at the arena.
Right.
So yeah, things were pretty bad, and I think with the amount of fans in Europe, it was the Nuggets were absolutely perfect in every sense of a candidate to go over there for that, because they will get more fans at that game probably than at any other game besides a Warriors and Lakers game all year, and so I think they're just a perfect fit.
Surely that Lakers bandwagon's going to die a bit, isn't it?
Man, you would think. I mean, Kobe was here last year, and actually he lit us up. I think his second best game of the year was at Pepsi Center. But yeah, that was like all Laker fans. It will be curious to see what happens next year. Because it's not really Lakers fans as much as it's Kobe's fans that show up to the arena.
Right. I definitely wonder if when our children are grown, if the Lakers legacy will have been somehow, they will have righted the ship, and it won't be like at one time the Lakers were, you know, like the most the most popular and powerful, you know,
that, it would
franchise.
Be awesome if that's a distant memory. I would be very okay with this.
I like crapping on the Lakers because we have no listeners in Los Angeles, so this is fine. Do you live in Denver currently?
I do. Yeah, I was actually born in Dallas, but spent my whole life here. I lived in LA for a little bit, but I've been in Denver for, I don't know, 26 of my 32 years.
Oh, wow. So are you a lifelong, would you call yourself a lifelong Nuggets fan?
Yeah, so I wasn't a diehard Nuggets fan as a kid, just because when you're a kid, you watch whatever your dad watches. And my dad watched football, yep, like everybody else in Denver. I was a basketball fan. I was a basketball player. And then when I moved out of the house at 18, so that was 2003, that was also the year the Nuggets got Carmelo Anthony. And so that's when I really became a diehard fan and started following the team game in and game out.
That's cool. Do you have an all-time favorite Nugget?
Not really, to be honest. Antonio McDice was the guy as a kid. I got a poster of him probably for free, and so I put that up in my room, but I don't think I have a necessarily, you know, deep connection to him. Although I would say Andre Miller is probably the guy that I overvalue more than than most, but I love his game.
I can accept the Antonio McDice answer. The answers I was looking for was Nick Van Exel or Chris Anderson.
Yeah, see, that was you mean the Birdman,
Chris? Oh, Anderson? The Birdman, yeah, of course.
Nick Van Exel was a little bit before my time,
right,
although I definitely like him. And Birdman, he was everybody's favorite player,
right,
when he was here in Denver, which is kind of funny.
It's not funny. I remember distinctly him exploding on the scene. Like, I was watching League Pass whenever that was, maybe like 2003 or something.
Yeah.
And I saw him do like a rebound dunk where he tip dunked it and then got flipped over and landed on his head. And like me and my roommate jumped up, like, oh no, oh, is he okay? And then he pops up, runs down the court, and then on the next possession does the same thing, misses the dunk, lands on his head again. And I was like, this guy's amazing.
I remember the exact play, actually. That like sticks out. But yeah, he was fun to watch. He has a fun story because he came from the D-League. I think he was the first D-League call-up,
right,
in history. And he was kind of just a hustle guy. He made plays like that nonstop, and the crowd loved him for it. Then he became the tattoo guy.
Right.
And then he became like a legitimate piece on a championship contender,
right,
with Miami. So now I think he's kind of gone full circle to where now he's actually appreciated as a very skilled and versatile, you know, defender.
Absolutely. And then you also throw in the him getting suspended for 2 years with the drug policy, and then him getting framed
with that
really insane story, you know, of you know, someone using his IP address to try to frame him for different unlawful internet activities, but it was all sorted out.
Yeah, that was pretty wild. You could write a whole book on the Birdman.
Yep. So moving to this year's Nuggets team, the Nuggets have way too many players. Can you explain that?
They have a lot of good players and no great players, but I think that's okay because I think that's kind of a smart rebuilding strategy to have tons of assets that can in the future be consolidated into, you know, a handful of really good players. But yeah, they're deep at every position, and not necessarily you know, deep with like superstar talent, but just deep with guys that are all kind of the same skill level. So you talk about point guards. Emmanuel Mudiay this year I think will be at least as good as Jameer Nelson, you know, just from a raw productivity standpoint. And then Jamal Murray will be right behind them, but he needs to play because he was a number seven pick and a very promising player. So right off the bat, you've got three point guards that all need minutes. At shooting guard, you've got much the same thing because Jamal Murray will play some there. Gary Harris is the sure starter. And then they just drafted Malik Beasley. They've got Will Barton. All of those guys need minutes, with the exception of maybe Malik Beasley, who can sit the bench this year. They all need minutes. At the center, that's our core of the team. Nikola Jokic is probably the best, most promising player on the roster. But Yusuf Nurkic 2 years ago was the most promising player on the roster. So there's a lot of I think right now there's a lot of healthy competition for minutes. But as the season goes on, I think the Nuggets are going to have to start figuring out who are their guys that are going to actually stick long term and who are the guys that maybe should be sold high as prospects because there's just not minutes for them.
Right. So I want to dive into a little of the guys you've already talked about. So last year, Nikola Jokic took the league by storm. And I think also the kind of hardcore league passers and like fantasy basketball players pounced on him early when like, you're like, who's this guy who had 9 assists in a game? And
right,
then watching him, the excitement just grew and grew. And he finished, you know, ended up finishing third in the rookie of the year.
But I'm curious. So would you think the optimism for Jokic this year is higher than it was for Nurkic the year before? I don't know if that's a confusing question.
No, no, I totally got it. And I'd say absolutely, without question. With Nurkic, he was like the lone bright spot of the worst year in Nuggets history, or one of the worst years in Nuggets history.
Sure.
So I think there was some, like, we all kind of know, not that we're overrating the guy, but like, that was the only, you know, if that's the only bright thing, you kind of be a little bit more optimistic about it. With Nikola Jokic, nobody expected it. He slowly took over more and more minutes, and then he became the starter in January. And then this dude is a legitimately versatile, all-around, super skilled player. He's so unique. People always ask, like, what kind of comp is he? And he's not a comp to anything right now. He plays like a guard, but he's 6'10". He's got great post work, and then he has these really weird instincts. The guy is – our site's called Denver Stiffs because that's what Doug Moe used to call guys that couldn't move. And he's a stiff. He's like, he moves really awkwardly and really slowly, but really effectively because he has such great timing. So I think there's no question. Nurkic is a really good rim protector, and every now and then he can make some good passes, but he has terrible footwork on offense. He has terrible touch around the rim. I think he shot like 40% at the rim last year. Whereas Jokic, everything he does is so impressive that you got to assume he's guaranteed just to get better and better.
Right. I remember Nurkic 2 years ago going toe to toe with Boogie Cousins and with Mark Gasol in a couple games where like he was barking at him, getting in his face, and I was like, who is this guy? This guy rules. And then, you know, thinking that coming into last year, you know, he might get more minutes, you know, might turn up like a, you know, 14-9 averages type of thing. But then again, yeah, he was hurt and then got totally lapped by Jokic. And now Jokic, you're like, wow, like what is this guy's ceiling? Like, do you anticipate him making another leap, or do you think the Nuggets coaching staff thinks he is, or do you think they're going to kind of try to temper expectations?
Those things are kind of intertwined. And here's what I'll say with Jokic. He finished with about 20 minutes per game. I think the last month of the season, he was playing 30 minutes a game, you know, much more minutes. I think it's all going to depend on how the coaching staff uses him and how they build around him. Because from my perspective, he has a very low turnover rate. I think they need to give him more touches and initiate the offense through him much more frequently. And if they do that, I think he has the chance to grow into much more of a cornerstone piece. What I would anticipate and expect is that they use him much the same way as they did last year, which is kind of a low usage player. And at that case, I mean, he might have marginal gains in his sophomore season. So I'm really curious. If it were me and I were the coach, I would completely restructure the offense to get him elbow touches, because he's such a phenomenal playmaker from the elbow. He'll make, I mean, honestly, Sabonis-like passes, you know, behind the back, look away, pass fake, and then drop off. He has every type of pass in the book from the elbow, and then he's a pretty good one-on-one scorer, you know, with his back to the basket or shooter. So that's what I hope, how they hope I use him. And if they do use him that way, I would expect him to put up some pretty crazy numbers on occasion and to be, you know, once again, pretty high in the advanced metrics.
Do you see in the front court rotation, do you see Joffrey LaVerne falling out of the rotation completely? Or like, is he a guy, like, I don't see him as a effective four at all, you know? And so like,
It's tough because the Nuggets, again, have a logjam at the four. Kenneth Faried is the starter. Darrell Arthur is the clear backup. And Darrell Arthur is kind of that – you guys know him from Memphis. In my opinion, an underrated player because he does his role and he does it really, really well. He stretches the floor on offense and he can knock down that shot surprisingly well. But defensively, he never misses a rotation. You know, he always does the right thing at least. And So he's definitely getting minutes. So Joffrey's kind of the third power forward and the third center. And oh, by the way, Gallinari plays some power forward as well. So I don't know where he fits into the rotation. He's a guy that I definitely could see falling out. But the one caveat I will say is that everybody in that front court besides Nikola Jokic is injury prone. So, right, you know, a guy falls out of the rotation and then Joffrey's right back in there.
Yep, I see it. And so then again, diving deep into the Nuggets roster, you have that four spot where, like, I assume Gallinari is kind of, is he still looked at as the leader slash best player, like yeah. that they're building around. And again, his best position might be with the way the NBA is moving at that four spot. But then, Wilson Chandler, what can you tell me about Wilson Chandler? Because there's very little information about him on the internet as far as, cause he's had hip trouble. He missed all of last year. Like I hear he's back, but this is a guy under contract for several more years. Is this someone, do you think the Nuggets organization expects to be a big part of this season and the future? Or is it just more like they're hoping to see what they can get from him?
They absolutely believe in Wilson Chandler, and I do as well. I'm actually writing an article next week about what a big impact he has on the team. I'm so high on his skill set. I think he's the absolute perfect player for the modern era of the NBA. Because he's a reliable three-point shooter, not great, but a reliable three-point shooter. He's 6'8". He can guard twos, threes, and fours very effectively. And he's a guy that I think that one of the reasons he flies so under the radar is because he's not a flashy player. I talked to a guy that saw him play in a Seattle Pro-Am a year ago, so last summer. And he said, man, he really didn't look that great at the Pro-Am. And I thought, of course not. He's not a Pro-Am player. He's not going to give you a double crossover step back. He's not going to put up 30 points, but he's a guy that as a role player is kind of that fourth or fifth best guy in the lineup. He makes every single right cut, spaces the floor perfectly. He's kind of like a super Richard Jefferson. And we saw, you know, what kind of impact Richard Jefferson can have when he's only supposed to be a role player. I think Wilson Chandler will be the exact same. And then the other thing is he provides versatility that the Nuggets were lacking so much last year. Will Barton is too skinny to guard fours. He's kind of too skinny to guard threes.
Yep.
Gary Harris is too short to guard some threes and fours. Wilson Chandler's that guy that, you know, Kobe Bryant put up tons of points on the Nuggets. Andrew Wiggins put up a bunch of points. The Nuggets didn't have a guy that could defend a player like that, a tall perimeter player. And Wilson Chandler is that guy. So I think he's going to have a tremendous impact. Probably more of an impact than any of the players that the Nuggets added to the roster, any of the rookies. Or even possibly Yusef Nurkic, who's coming back. I think Wilson Chandler's going to be a huge addition to the team if he's healthy.
Right. He was a guy. So as a Grizzlies fan, last summer, one of my ideas was, like, the Grizzlies need to get a wing player. I think Wilson Chandler might be undervalued, might be available from the Nuggets, and I would like to see the Grizzlies roll the dice on him, you know, because he could fit in great. But then, yeah. Of course, that would have been a terrible roll of the dice, at least for last year, because, again, he ended up missing the year from injury again. So, yeah, he's
just a completely weird injury because he came in last year. I thought he looked as lean and as ripped as I'd ever seen. He was moving great in the preseason. He had a game in the preseason where he had 19 rebounds. Wow. He's such a great player, and he got hurt on a non-contact hip thing. So, you know, I don't know if he's ever played a full season. He's just one of those guys that he might just be injury prone, and I hope not, because I'd love to see him on the court.
Yep. You mentioned Will Barton. I'm a pretty loud detractor of Will Barton's game.
Yeah.
And it's actually made me some enemies because I talk about the Grizzlies a lot, and I'm real involved on Twitter with a lot of Memphis fans, and you know he's a Memphis guy, like went to college in Memphis.
Yeah.
So I get a lot of grief from pointing it out. What's your Will Barton take, or can you tell me what I'm wrong about on Will Barton?
No, because I agree with you, and I get a lot of hate as well. So it's kind of funny because I don't meet a lot of people that share my opinion, but I'll give mine, and maybe this is where you're coming from. I actually like Will Barton, and he's making $3 million a year, which is penny. I mean, that's less than rookies. So his contract absolutely justifies the value he brings. He's a off-the-bench gunner, an off-the-bench hustle player that just make plays. He's a guy that he'll do the wrong thing and it'll still work out just because he just never stops going 100%. So there is a lot to like for him. The reason I'm low on him is that, you know, I don't think he's necessarily a high basketball IQ guy, and he is kind of a feast or famine type player in that he comes into the game and he just starts going, and if that doesn't work out, you know, then you've kind of lost his entire value. But again, at $3 million, he's perfect. This Nuggets team needed scoring last year, and he provided it. I think he led the team in double figure scoring games last year. So he actually was consistent despite being kind of a chaotic player. But I just think it's, I think when you're building long term, he's not the kind of player that it's hard to be more structured with him because right. he's such a go kind of guy.
Mentioning the high IQ, I believe he shot a half court shot last year with 9 seconds on the clock. But I mean, my take is similar to yours. Where again, like I'm not saying he's like a bad guy because he does seem to. He plays incredibly hard. You know, he's not one of those guys where you're like, this guy is kind of flaking out on my team. Like, no, like he goes hard. My take is more, yeah, he's got offensive skills, but he seems to be severely lacking in just basketball ability, yeah. You know, yeah. like some basic things. And I thought some of his successes last year were more of the, there was a vacuum on the Nuggets, you know, scoring ability that he filled. So it's like, my take is, I'm not sure he's good. I like watching him play. Like, don't get me wrong. He's fun to watch play, but
I think you got it. I think that's 100% accurate.
Yep.
But we are in the minority there because Nuggets fans absolutely loved him, and for good reason.
Yep.
He scored when we needed somebody to score. So
right.
It worked out.
And most of my scouting takes are normally very wrong. So,
but by the way, DJ Augustine, the Nuggets added him in February, and he's kind of the same. In that he comes in and also, you know, he hits tough shots more than he creates easy ones. And he kind of stole Barton's thunder. I think right when DJ Augustine came in, Will Barton stopped scoring, which I thought was an interesting phenomenon. It might be just that this was the first time Will Barton played so many minutes in a season, and by February he was worn out.
Yeah.
But it might be that you can only have one Will Barton on the court at a time, and DJ Augustine took that role. I don't know.
Right. What do you think the Nuggets team goals are, the internal realistic goals are going into the season? Do you think they're expecting playoffs, or is that
this is where things are so tricky for the Nuggets, because this is year three of them being bad going into year four. The first two were not a rebuild. They thought they were good and they were wrong. So this is really only 1 year of a rebuild, and if you miss the playoffs for 1 year and then a second year, it's no big deal. But now we're talking about potentially missing for 4 years, and that is a big deal. I think internally, and I'm almost positive of this because, you know, I talked to the coaches in front office somewhat a bit, but they've never expressly said it. I think internally they know this is not a playoff team. It's a 9 seed or a 10 seed, and maybe it's a playoff team if everything breaks right. I hope at least that's what they think, because that's what I think is definitely the case. They might be an 11 seed this year and can still have a successful season if everybody improves. But I am certainly worried. My biggest worry coming in to this season would probably be that the team finishes with like 36 wins, a marginal improvement, maybe 35, and the ownership group sees that as a failure and decides to go in a different direction, because I think they're in the right direction. I just think it's going to be a slow process, and I hope they have patience for it.
Would you be in favor of moving a lot of those extra pieces to try to, I don't know if shortcut is the word, you know, but like moving a lot of those pieces for maybe a superstar type player or even a B-list superstar type player?
The reason I'm not is because I still don't feel like I know me personally, who watches every single game, sometimes watches these games two times because I'm doing a scouting video. I still don't feel like I know for certain what these players are going to be. We talked about Jokic and Nurkic. There's still a chance that Nurkic comes out this year and just really turns heads again, and then, you know, that whole dynamic switches. Gary Harris is a guy that did everything the team asked from him last year. I still don't know if he's a guy that's just going to be limited but reaches his potential, or if he has a whole other level to get to that we haven't even seen yet. So I think the Nuggets need to play out at least the first 4 or 5 months of the season and then maybe start to pull the trigger on something like that. And if not, at least then go into next summer and then it's time to pull the trigger on stuff like that. So for this season, I feel like it's still an evaluation year. I don't think pulling the trigger now, I could see them trading away a player like, you know, like Nurkic, and him going somewhere and becoming a top 7 or 8 center in the league in 3 years. So I think they just need more time to figure out what they have.
Yeah, I think one of the tough things about the Nuggets, they have so many guys that have potential, and they have so many other pieces where you're just not sure, like a guy like Gallinari and Chandler that we talked about, who have had injury issues, where it's like, after how many years do we keep planning around these guys? And then you're depending on Moutier. Like last year they gave Moutier, you know, the keys to the kingdom to take the team. And then it's like, so we give Moutier another year, and then it's very possible you get to the end of the season, like you said, and you won 36 games and you're still like, yeah, all these guys are pretty good. And and you don't know what the ceiling is going to be. It might be something like the Portland Trailblazers that, in my estimation, you know, they feel good about every position they have on their roster, but they might just win 45 games or, you know, 47 games. And it's like, well, now what?
That's definitely the fear, is that this Nuggets team has a bunch of guys with potential, and the fear would be that none of them reach that, because, you know, potential is such a – your odds of all these guys being great anyway are pretty low. But the nice thing is you've cast such a wide net that the odds of one of them being great is very high.
Yeah.
So, that's why I think the Nuggets just need to stay put for a year, because they'll have a better idea of which guy is likeliest to reach their potential and which guys aren't.
Right. I mean, and at the very least, the Nuggets are probably near the top of the NBA in optimism, in fan optimism, because you guys have so many young guys where you're like, this guy's cool. Like, we haven't even mentioned Hernan Gomez. And you're like, that guy seems fun. All these guys seem fun. Like, my team, the Grizzlies, are in the exact opposite boat. We're all like, oh, we have Chandler Parsons, yay. But we have nothing. There's like nothing behind, you know, like coming down the pipeline. Speaking of, the Nuggets own the Grizzlies draft pick for next year.
Yes.
Is there anything we can do to get that back?
I don't think so. The Nuggets are trying to outsource their tank, although with all the moves you guys made this year, I think that kind of ruined the tank idea for Denver.
It's going to be a very unsexy 16, 17, 15 pick. It's, you know, it's going to be.
Yeah, I know. And it was such a drag, because there was a moment a month ago where it was like, maybe everything's going to fall apart, you know, in Memphis. Maybe that pick's going to be like number 6 or 7, which would have been great. But no, I think barring injuries, yeah, that dream has sailed.
All right. Well, you just. Once the season starts, you guys start off like 3-6. You just look at that Memphis roster. We'll see if we can work something out.
Okay.
All right. Hey, to wrap up, do you ever get when I met you in person, you actually reminded me of someone.
And
I'm curious, do you have do people ever say you look like a certain actor?
George Clooney, I get that a lot.
Well, that was what I was thinking. Not so much in appearance, but essence. You definitely essence, gave me a Clooney essence. I was like,
there you go.
This is nice.
So what looks? You're saying just looks?
Man, I honestly, looks and in your speaking pattern, and then the way you were making jokes and laughing, I thought it was uncanny. I don't know. Are you familiar with Party Down? The show Party Down?
I'm not.
That's too bad. The actor-comedian Ken Marino, who plays Ron on Party Down.
Okay.
I can tweet photos of you guys side by side. Because
I'm looking at this guy, and he's a total goober.
No, he's a comedian goober. Yeah, I mean, he's a straightforward comedian. There's a black and white photo of him I found that matches your black and white Twitter headshot.
Nice.
But seriously, you were like a non-depressed Ron from Party Down. He's the main guy. He has great plans to open a soup or salad fast food restaurant, and he just can't put it all together. Anyway.
That sounds delightful. I love a nice salad.
I do strongly recommend the show Party Down, but you were a dead ringer for like I actually told my wife that night, like I met a guy that was Ron from Party Down, but like a non-depressed version.
I'm going to take that as a compliment, because I could tell you you like this character. So.
Oh, yeah. No.
Sounds good.
I feel nothing but fondness. Okay. Another question to close. This is kind of on the spot. I asked my last guest this. If you could change any NBA rule, what would it be? Do you have any rule changes that you...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And maybe it's slightly controversial, but I would take away the college rule, because I absolutely hate college hoops.
What do you mean the college rule?
The 1 year.
The 1 year.
The one and done. I would just say straight to the NBA again, because I have this... I have this big thing about college basketball and even to a certain extent European basketball that it's too different from the NBA. It's just way too different. It's almost like you're learning a different sport. So a lot of people, you know, especially a lot of the old guard, oh, you got to go to the college because you learn your fundamentals. I think you learn different fundamentals. There's some programs like Duke and Kentucky and a handful of others where I think you actually learn some NBA skills because they play more NBA style. But by and large, just go to the NBA. You'll learn a lot more, I think, from those coaches. So I would get rid of that rule.
That's a good one. I have no objection. I think college basketball is unwatchable. I don't watch it at all. And they definitely don't. I don't think they learn anything. Everyone, I feel like college fans, there's the college fan subset that's like, you know, college basketball is hustle and fundamentals. And then I watch the games. I'm like, none of these players are hustling. Like, they're all getting beat on back cuts. Because they're playing some loose zone, or they're not paying attention. So,
and you got some 7-foot dude that can't make layups, and it's like, this is, I don't get the fundamental part of this game, but okay.
Exactly. All right, and finally, what is your ideal breakfast?
Oh man, this is terrible of me, but I don't eat breakfast every day. That's a meal I skip more often than not.
We don't judge. That's fine. That's a very common answer.
But this is going to be a weird one. Like a brunch buffet is like the greatest thing on earth. So I would say – and that's like every type of food. So I guess I don't have an ideal breakfast except for all of them.
That's fine. I think a brunch – but if you're at a brunch, if you're sitting down in some nice brunch destination spot in Denver and you have to order, like what are you going to order?
Oh, man. Probably like breakfast tacos. That'll be the go-to.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I'm a Hispanic guy and I love Mexican food, so some breakfast tacos would probably be the go-to.
That's pretty good. Would you get a mimosa? Are you Bloody Mary with the tacos?
Man, I don't. I'm despite what you might have seen in Vegas.
I didn't see anything in Vegas.
I'm not a very big drinker, so
okay.
So breakfast drinks in particular are just like sound terrible to me.
Just too much.
That's too much.
Is it because of the high altitude? Because I was there once, and you can get tipsy quick. Like,
yeah,
I visited Denver, and it's like into a beer. You're like, oh.
Yeah. I don't think it's that.
Okay.
That is definitely a factor.
Well, I'm just curious. When you're down in Las Vegas or when you're somewhere at low altitude and you've been coming from high altitude – like, can you just drink forever? Or like, are you like a god with your tolerance level?
There is that phenomenon for sure. So, you know, I played basketball in college at a little school, and we would always travel to the coast for games and stuff. And not only like the altitude thing is for real. We would train obviously in Colorado and then go down to sea level, and I felt like I could run 10 miles without stopping.
Right.
And the same was definitely true for alcohol. We had to buy like 4 or 5 extra drinks just because you're like, wow, we're in great drinking shape right now.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Hey, well, thanks, Adam, for visiting with us. We appreciate all your Denver Nuggets insight.
Hey, you bet, man. Now I have to go watch Party Down.
Man, you got to watch Party Down. I'm serious. Like, like something about your cadence of jokes and laughter and honestly your appearance, because I think Ken Marino's a tall guy. Like,
that's too funny, man. If I'm going to check it out, and if he's a goober, I'm blocking you on Twitter.
That's perfect. All right. Hey, thanks, Adam.
Thanks so much for having me on, Keith. Lots of fun.
All right. Appreciate it. All right. That was great stuff from Adam Mahrez. You can follow him on Twitter at Adam_Mahrez, M-A-R-E-S. You can read him at Denver Stiffs, Vice Sports, and all stuff like that. All right, guys, thanks for listening. Check us out on Twitter at FastBreakBreak. Like us on Facebook. Write us an iTunes review. Really helps us out. Follow us on Rabble.tv. I think John and I are going to do a tournament game or one of the Olympic games. And so that'll be fun to do and fun for you, hopefully. All right, you guys are the best. Thanks for listening. And remember, breakfast is the most important thing.